Take a Ride in the Midnight Cab, written by James W. Nichol and starring David Ferry as your would-be novelist, taxi driver, and sometime detective, Walker Devereaux.
April 12th, 2:30 in the morning. I helped Krista move into her new apartment today. It's on Kingston Road, first floor, right next to the back door, so it's easy for her to get in and out using her crutches. She had a lot of stuff. I mean, it was amazing. Dressers and bed and desks and clothes and a dining room suite from her aunt or something and two couches and I don't know what all. Her father and her mother and I helped move her in. He didn't say anything to me all day except hire and turn and watch your step. He didn't look at me once. He hates my guts. Luckily, her mother never stopped talking, so it covered up a lot of awkward stuff. And when she was all moved in, I left, and then she called me, and I came back after her parents had gone home. And we kind of celebrated her new place and got a little wrecked on some wine and made love. And then, I just felt like coming back to my own place. She didn't want me to, necessarily, but that's where I am now, listening to Sonny Boy Williamson and sitting in my window writing in my journal and looking down on a mostly deserted church street. Kingston Road is quite a long ways away. Krista will be asleep now, all curled up in her bed under that fancy comforter. Gee, this is great. Some guys say, women, what do they really want? Not me. Like, take what happened last week. For me, it's more like, who are they?
Walker, where are you now?
Hey, you, Krista.
Hey, you, Walker.
Stockholm, Sweden. I've just accepted the Nobel Prize for my first novel, and I'm about to announce to the world that I think I'll write another one.
Great. But before you start, will you pick up a fare at the corner of Queen and Markham? She just wants to go home.
Hi.
Hi.
I'm out of here.
Right.
Bastards. Rotten dorks.
Problems?
Do you mind if I smoke? Like, it isn't a smoke-free cab or anything, is it?
No way. Sometimes it fills up with smoke all on its own.
Ugh, I can't believe them.
Who?
My so-called friends. We made an agreement. I mean, it was like a pact. Shirley was driving. She'd only have two drinks, and if one of us wanted to go home because some guy was bugging her or whatever, then we'd all go. So Shirley's totally shit-faced, and Carol and Janine are being hustled by these total creep mass murderers, probably. And they're calling me suck and total dweeb just because I want to go home.
Great friends.
Yeah, well, not anymore. I don't even want to see their stupid faces anymore. They can just all be friends together and go drop off a cliff or something.
You did the right thing. I mean, calling a cab.
Yeah?
Sure. You don't want to risk your life driving some drunk just so you don't look like a nerd or something. You were really smart.
Well, I called my dad first, and he said to call a cab.
Yeah? Well, your dad's smart, too.
I guess. I just can't believe them. They're like different people. Know what I mean?
Yeah. Some people are like that. You just never know.
Walker, where are you now?
Well, I'm waiting.
What do you mean you're waiting?
Yeah, at an apartment building off Logan Avenue. This girl, she didn't have any money, so she's gone in to get some from her dad.
Oh?
Yeah, she was having a rough time at some club. Nice kid.
Well, so, like, how long have you been waiting?
Oh, I don't know. 20 minutes or so.
20 minutes? Walker, guess what? You've been stiff.
No, I haven't.
Yes, you have. Look, you've been stiff. You're just sitting there and you know it, and you're just too stubborn to admit it, right?
No, I haven't.
Okay. So, how long are you going to wait, Walker? Till morning?
The apartment building had about six floors to it, a crescent shape, sitting at the end of a dead-end street. There were some kids, young guys, messing around under a street lamp out front, a few cars parked in the driveway, a long-haul tractor pulled onto an empty lot across the street. Apartment 412. That's what she'd said. Then she smiled at me and said,
I'll be right down, okay?
I'll be here.
Right.
Right. She'd run towards the apartment, up the steps. She looked pretty good going away, too. Into the lobby, took out a key, opened the inner door and disappeared. The guys under the light drifted away down the street, and I waited. Okay, 2, 3, 4, 412. I'm still here, sweetheart. Remember? Come on. Answer it. I buzzed her apartment a couple of times. This guy came in behind me, unlocked the door, so I followed him in. I took the elevator up to the fourth floor and decided I wouldn't be too angry. I mean, maybe she was having some hassle with her father, or maybe he didn't have any money either. You can never tell about these things. Maybe she lied. Maybe she lived alone and she was broke.
What the hell do you want?
Hi, is your,
Was that
daughter?
You buzzing? To break your neck, man. It's 1 o'clock in the morning.
Look, I brought someone here in a cab. They said 412. They owe me money.
Well, maybe they do, man. But they don't live here. Okay?
Okay.
The man had come to the door in his pajama bottoms. His wife was standing behind him in the hallway, a pink dressing gown pulled on. Definitely not Dana's parents, if that was her real name, because, well, they were black.
What?
I lost the cab.
What?
Like I said, I came out of the building and it wasn't there.
My God, he lost the cab.
What happened?
I don't know. It disappeared, that's all.
Am I gonna puff a smoke or what? How the hell can you lose a cab? I never lost a cab in my life.
Well, let him talk, Alfonso. Just shut up.
Well, where is it? Where's my cab?
That's the problem. That's what he just said.
Oh. Are my premiums paid? For God's sakes, what kind of insurance have I got? Am I covered?
Alfonso.
Okay, yeah, I'm calm, all right? I'm listening, see? A $20,000 vehicle.
6 years ago.
I was like, it was boosted, that's all.
Boosted?
Yeah, that's what the cops think. I had the keys in my pocket. I was only away from it for, I don't know, maybe 10 minutes. But that's all they need. They lift the whole key assembly out, put in their own, and they're gone.
Oh, God.
There were some guys hanging around in the street. The cops say it's a hot area for car thieves, so... I'm having a bad night.
Walker, the doors were locked, isn't that right?
No, I just told you I
was... Hey, you're not listening. The doors were locked, right?
Oh, right.
Yeah, well, that's good.
Except, the cops? I've already told them that they weren't.
I want to see my insurance policy. I mean, I want to see it right now.
Just wait.
I for insurance.
So, what's the chance of getting it back?
I don't know. The cops said zero to none. It'll already be in some garage. They'll strip it for parts. The rest will be tossed in the middle of some junkyard by dawn. This Sergeant Davies, he said he'd come around and see Mr. Piattelli in the morning.
Oh, Walker. I'm sorry.
I couldn't believe it.
Yeah. So, how did you get back here?
I took a cab.
I helped Mr. Piattelli go through his files. He was covered for theft. It didn't say anything about the doors having to be locked. Then I waited for Krista to finish her shift, and then we went back to our apartment. I mean, it was our apartment a week ago.
Walker, are your eyes open?
Yeah.
I thought so. That's why I can't get to sleep. Shut them, please.
Pretend they're shut. Pretend I'm sleeping.
Okay.
That girl.
Hmm?
You know, my last fare? The one who never came back with the money?
Walker, I'm gonna... Kill you.
Yeah, but I was just thinking. She told me her apartment number. I mean, it was real clear. 412.
So?
She didn't have to. I mean, why would she bother telling me a fake apartment number if she wasn't going to come back? Why wouldn't she just go into the building and disappear?
I don't know, Walker. Why?
Huh. I don't know either.
Oh.
Why?
Are you kidding? There's 90 units in here, a third of them housekeeping, rent by the week. You don't have a name, I don't have a number. Hey, Ishmael, wash the floor, not the wall, okay? You're splashing all over the bloody place.
Yeah, but she has red hair. It's kind of like a brush cut with green in it.
Green?
Yeah. And she was sort of medium tall, slim. Hard to tell how old she was. Maybe 19, 17, I don't know, maybe older. It was dark.
Ishmael, you missed half the floor. I can see it from here. She left about a half hour ago, her and her old man.
Her dad?
No, her old man. Some guys have all the luck, huh? They checked out, got in the truck, and vamoosed back to Manitoba, I guess.
What truck? You mean that transport tractor that was parked across the road?
Yeah, that's it. So, there's one fare down the toilet, huh? You guys are having a run of bad luck. About 1 o'clock last night, they tell me someone stole a cab out front, too.
No kidding.
I drove Krista's orange Toyota Tercel with the black racing stripes back to AP Cabs along Dundas Street. Whoever Dana was, she wasn't somebody's good little girl. Games, charades, guess who I am, guess what I want. Dana wants a cab. Krista, she wants... How would I know?
Standing reservations?
Yeah.
Why? I shouldn't even be talking to you. I should be mad at you or something.
Because I think your cab's still in one piece.
You do?
I was set up last night. That girl, this older guy. I think he was watching me from his truck parked across the street. I go into the lobby because I have the apartment number. He follows me, unlocks the door. So naturally, I go in too because I'm after my money. He turns down the hall. I wait for the elevator. He goes out as I go up, boosts the cab, and parks it out of sight somewhere.
Yeah? What, is he nuts? I mean, what's he going to do with it? Drive around and pick up fares?
Yeah, maybe. If it was exactly a maroon and white AP cab they were after, if they were going to pick up someone who reserves an AP cab every day.
Mr. Piatelli's round, broad face clouded over for a moment. Then he looked at me. Then he grabbed the standing reservation book. It wasn't really a book. It was a scribbler where customers' names were listed and scratched out as they canceled their pickup orders.
We only got a few right now. This old lady... She goes to the orthopedics hospital in Wellesley every Friday. These people work 7 a.m. pickup, 6:30 a.m. pickup, dailies. See? Couple of nurses on night shift.
Yeah, I know, I do them.
Let's see. This old guy, oh, he goes in for blood. And these two little kids, and we pick them up at 3:30 every afternoon, you know, after school.
Huh? Where's the school?
East End, Logan Avenue. Logan Avenue. That's like, what, 10 minutes from where the cab was stolen, right?
Yeah. What time is it now?
4 o'clock.
Who picks him up?
I don't know. Who's ever closest? Look, I'll check with Kathy.
Mr. Piatelli went scuffling across the garage, all 300 pounds of him, heading for the day dispatcher. I looked at the list. Mrs. Susan Vollmer, Pape Avenue, only a couple of blocks from Logan. So why a taxi cab for her kids? Charlie and Diane, 320, sharp. Inside the front door, Withrow Park Public School. I called Mrs. Vollmer's number, let it ring 10 times. No answer.
Hey, Walker! Alfredo went over to the school. They weren't there.
Why didn't he call in?
He did. Kathy told him, don't worry, maybe they went home with somebody else.
Joe Smart, general handyman at the garage, said he'd drive Krista's car over to the apartment to help her down the stairs. That was part of the problem. Her crutches, her wheelchair, 3 flights of stairs up to my place. She hated being trapped, having to depend on me, even though I was, like, totally dependable most of the time. Damn stairs. Anyway, Mr. Piatelli, he let me have his Cadillac, 1959, pink and kind of close. It's so immaculate, almost all original parts. He usually doesn't let me get within 20 feet of it, but this was an emergency, and he thought he had a chance of getting his cab back all in one piece, which kind of clouded his judgment, so he let me. Mrs. Vollmer lived in a high-rise on Pape Avenue. It was 4:30.
I'm going to go insane.
Please, Mrs. Vollmer.
I'm going insane. I'm going insane.
There was a neighbor woman from down the hall standing in the kitchen making coffee and looking anxious. Other than her, Mrs. Vollmer was alone.
Oh, God.
She rocked back and forth on the sofa, her face white with shock, her eyes flaming red from crying. She had arrived home 20 minutes ago, searched frantically through the building, knew all the time in her heart what had happened, made all the phone calls, the school, the cab company, the police. The police were supposed to be on their way. Someone from Children's Aid was supposed to be on their way, and me from the cab company. It was all too late.
He's taken them. Oh, God. What's he going to do? What'll he do?
Mrs. Vollmer, who?
My husband. I have a court order. I have a peace bond. Oh, God, what good does it do me? I moved 3 times. I put the children in another school.
He couldn't have gone far.
He'll be gone. You don't know him. He'll disappear.
Mrs. Vollmer, how long, have you two been separated?
2 years. 2 years. He turned violent. He was violent to me, to the children. He doesn't want them. He wants to get back at me. He wants to get back.
How did he find you?
I don't know.
Do you know where he's been living?
I don't know. Somewhere. Away from the city. One night, he broke in. Beat me up. Police came, charged him. He never showed up in court. They think he left. I don't know where. Somewhere, out of Ontario. Oh, God. I did everything I could.
But how about your parents? Do they live in Toronto?
Why? Yes. My mother's on her way over now.
Oh, Mrs. Vollmer, you moved. You changed your children's school and did everything you could, but your parents, I bet they didn't move.
No, why would they?
Do you and your kids visit?
Of course. Oh!
He'd watch their house, wouldn't he? And then he'd follow you back here, and then it would be just a matter of getting to know the kids' routine.
Oh, God. A friend of mine takes them to school on her way to work in the morning, and the cab is supposed to pick them up at 3:20, not 3:30 or 3:40. I told your company. And I try to get out of my work by 4, and they don't leave the building without me. We go everywhere together. It's like hell for them. It's like living in hell, but I was so afraid.
Right. How old are they?
Charlie's 9. Diane's 7.
Is your husband's name, is it Vollmer, too?
No, it's my mother's maiden name. It was supposed to protect...
Mrs. Vollmer, his name?
Raycraft. Joseph Raycraft.
Okay. Right. I knew. If I was still in Mrs. Vollmer's apartment when the cops arrived, the cops and their notebooks, like it would take forever. So I wasn't. The first phone booth I came to, I phoned my brother-in-law in Big River. He wasn't home. He was on the road. He's a trucker. But my sister Judy was there. Joseph Raycraft and his girlfriend with the red-green hair had to be in town for at least a week, probably 2, to watch the grandparents' house, set everything up. But a trucking company wouldn't let an employee tie up an expensive long-haul transport for 2 weeks, which meant he was an independent. He owned his own rig, just like my brother-in-law. And that meant he would have hauled something into Toronto, and the chances were he'd arranged to haul something out. The independents have a booking service, a kind of clearinghouse, so they don't have to chase after their own jobs. There's an office in every major city. Judy had the Toronto address for me in 30 seconds, on Eastern Avenue. Then she wanted to talk, since she'd accepted my collect call. Like, what exactly was I doing with my life anyway? Jeez, 6 sisters. Sooner or later, they all end up sounding like... Mom.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that, Sirius.
It could be serious, yeah.
Well, it's the trouble with the trucker business. Huh? You're always on the road when there's a family problem. Okay, let me see if I can find him. Raycraft, Joseph... Okay, just a sec. Yeah, he came into town March 23rd. Consignment for Schneider's. Not his truck, though.
No?
No, he's driving Eddie Cobalt's rig. I know Eddie. He's been sick off and on. Taylor's at Canada Packers. Booked to be loaded. Let's see. Pork Hops, Winnipeg. Today? Well, you're in luck, huh? Well, maybe not. It's almost 6.
Refrigerated truck, then?
Yeah.
You got the plates?
You bet. Manitoba plates. Yeah, cab TT5614.
It was almost 7:15 by the time I parked Mr. Piatelli's pink Cadillac on a little dead-end street near the stockyards, then ran, then walked to the main gate and right through like I knew what I was doing. Nobody stopped me, so I circled around until I found the loading bays. I saw him before I saw his truck, standing up on the dock, a big man in a gray windbreaker in jeans, a close-cropped beard, the same man I followed into the apartment building the other night, the creep who ducked out the side door as I was going up the elevator and boosted my cab and drove it, probably, to some rented garage nearby. He lit up a cigarette and looked around. I ducked behind another truck, got busy examining one of the back wheels. He glanced at me, then looked away. Joseph Raycraft. I expected to see his girlfriend with the red-green hair and the underage attitude sitting in the cab when he pulled out, but she wasn't there. I expected to see two little faces pressed against the cab window, but they weren't there either. Just Daddy, driving by me, all alone. North on Western Road, all the way up to the 401, and then west out past the airport. I hung back about the length of a football field. It was easy enough following a truck with its high back looming above the traffic, and it wasn't as if he were suddenly going to cut down an alley. Where was he headed? West to Detroit, then around the south shore of the lakes and up to Winnipeg? And where was Red Green? Where were Charlie and Diane? And then he suddenly veered off, heading north on Dixie Road, turned right onto Steele's, and then pulled into a motel.
AP Cab.
Hi.
Walker, where are you?
Did Mr. Piatelli tell you about the kids?
Yes, he did. So where are you?
I think I might have found them.
What?
Yeah, listen, call Inspector Kiss. Tell him to get the cops out here in a hurry. White Spot Motel, corner of Dixie Road and Steeles.
Are you all right?
Oh, yeah, I'm fine.
Listen, just stay out of it, Walker, okay? Just watch and let the cops do their job.
Uh-oh.
What?
They're coming out. Here they come. Oh, geez, the kids are with them.
Walker!
Call Inspector Kiss! Joseph Raycraft opened up the cab door and threw a duffel bag into the bunk at the back. The girlfriend with the red-green hair, Dana, was holding under the hands of two little kids. Funny how daylight works. She was definitely all of 20, maybe more. Where'd he find her? In a truck stop? And the kids, faces as pale as paper, standing stiff. Stiff with fright. I jumped back into Mr. Piatelli's Cadillac, drove past some gas pumps into the motel courtyard, and parked right in front of the truck.
Hi! You still owe me $12.
It was amazing to watch her eyes. They just got wider and wider.
Hey, what's your problem, kid? Get that piece of crap out of the way.
You got her there. She owes me $12.
Joe, it's the cab driver.
The cab driver?
Now it was his turn, but his eyes didn't grow wider, just cold and narrow.
Hey, lift the kids up.
Why don't you leave them alone? They're scared to death.
What, you hear them crying?
Mind your own business. Go on, get out of here. Get out of here!
Where's my cab?
Screw off!
Hey, listen, you. They're my kids, mine. They've been taken away from me. I didn't have a chance. It's always the same. The bitches always win. They always win.
His face looked like it was going to explode, like he was caught in a trap. Then he turned, closed the door behind Red Green and the kids, hurried around the truck and got in behind the wheel. For some reason, I jumped up on the running board. I don't know exactly why, and as it turned out, it was a bad move. As soon as I jumped up, he opened the door.
Get off! I'll kill you!
I went flying back onto the ground, rolled away, looked up, and that's when I saw Mr. Piatelli's 1959 pink Cadillac going sideways, wrapped around the truck's fender, then slowly sliding off as the truck moved down the courtyard and then pulled out onto the road and drove away.
Has anybody seen my insurance policy?
Which one?
Which one? What do you mean, which one?
It's under C, for Cadillac.
Hey.
Well, Mr. Piatelli seems to have gotten over it a little bit. For one thing, the cops found his cab behind some warehouses where they had switched the kids from the cab to the truck. The cab was in perfect condition. The Cadillac, well, it will need a little work. Mrs. Vollmer got her children back. The OPP stopped the truck going west on Highway 7 about a half hour later, Joseph Raycraft and his young girlfriend, who, for all I know, believed in him and what he was trying to do, are in a fair bit of trouble. They're out in bail. Mrs. Vollmer says she'll have to move again. And Krista and I, we had an interesting conversation last night. The night before she moved.
I think we should get married. Krista? Are you awake?
What?
I think we should get married.
Now I'm awake. Walker, you're 19. You're not even housebroken yet. I'm not going to ruin your life. Just go to sleep.
Well, what do you want?
Where are we going? And what are you thinking? I can never tell.
We should want something.
I want you, Walker.
You're moving tomorrow.
Walker, since I was a little kid, I trained myself to do two things. Fight like hell and not expect too much. Just because you've come along doesn't mean I don't expect a trap door to open up somewhere and me to fall in, okay? This is plenty for now. It scares me enough, okay?
Well, seeing Charlie and Diane happy to be back with their mother, that was okay. Getting a great big hug from Mrs. Vollmer, that was okay. Krista, sleeping under her fancy comforter on Kingston Road, and me alone in my apartment, is definitely a bummer.
Every time the little girl started loving, she bring eyesight to the blind.
You've just heard Midnight Cab number 12, The Mystery of the Vanishing Cab by James W. Nichol. Featured in the cast were David Ferry as Walker and Jacqueline Samuda as Krista, with Howard Jerome as Mr. Piatelli. You heard Mary Long as Dana and Ron White as Raycraft, with Sherry Flett as Mrs. Vollmer. The apartment tenant was Gene Mack, while the manager was John Winston Carroll. The trucking agent was Graham McPherson. Music for the series is composed by Milan Kimlicka, and the casting consultant is Linda Grierson. The recording engineer is Joanne Anka, with sound effects by Matt Wilcott. The series production assistant is Nancy Dow. Midnight Cab is produced and directed in Toronto by Bill Howell.